like to call to order this meeting of the Special Education Subcommittee of Ways and, of the Full Ways and Means Committee, and it is February the 22nd, and which means we're going to be here about another week if the leadership gets their way. If not, we may be here a little longer. Okay, John.
Chair Monroe, members of the committee.
Need to open.
Open a work session on 4059. Public hearing of the work session. There we go.
One more time.
Chair Monroe, members of the committee. House Bill 4059 comes to you from the House Committee on Higher Education. The measure directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to carry out goals related to awarding academic credit for prior learning by students. Has the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, or HEC, to appoint an advisory committee to coordinate implementation of those goals and submit an annual report to the Legislative Assembly by December 31st of each calendar year. The measure also proposes a partnership with Western Governors University to provide online competency-based higher education degree programs. There should be a copy of the fiscal impact statement and the bill. We have no approved amendments for this one.
Okay. Representative Dembro, do you want to take the dais and testify on this?
Sure. Shall I go down? And Rep. Johnson's here, too. You can
Why don't you, the two of you, go down. Mark, where are you? You can come up, too. This is a bipartisan committee. We like to do things that way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, I'm Michael Dembro. I represent House District 45, Northeast Portland to Park Rose. And I'm happy to bring to you, together with my co-chair, a bill that was approved unanimously by the House Committee on Higher Education related to prior learning and proficiency-based education. You know, one of the tasks that we've taken on as a committee is how can we move this state more towards the goal of 40-40-20? And that's a huge goal. You all know that. And we're not going to get there by traditional means alone. We have to think outside the box. And one of the challenges that we see is that we have many people out there who have proficiencies and who would like to increase their credentials, but they find themselves in a position where they have to go back to school and take courses in subjects that they already know about. They've been doing this work. They got proficiencies in these areas through the military or through their corporate training, or perhaps they're immigrants from other countries and they, you know, they had their education abroad. And for them to have to retake all these courses is very frustrating for them. And frankly, it's expensive for them and it's expensive for the state. You know, more and more states are looking at encouraging credit for prior learning. And credit for prior learning has been out there for quite a while, but there have always been questions about how to make sure that you give credit and it's real credit, that it's really credit for learning, that students are really proficient, that schools are not just giving them credit when they really don't have the knowledge. Recently, there have been more new programs that have been created to produce these kinds of measures. And in the committee, we heard about one of them, It's a consortium of the American Council on Education and CAEL, which is a consortium that, of adult and experiential learning, that is moving in that direction. And we would like to see the state really encouraging the universities and colleges to be pursuing this. And this is right in line with our goals for the new Higher Education Coordinating Commission, whose job is to bring the parties together and to pursue statewide initiatives enhancing access and affordability. And we see this right in line with that. The other piece of it is has to do with the Western Governors University, which is a nonprofit proficiency-based online program that was created in the mid to late 90s by, I think, 17 governors, including John Kitzhaber back in his first iteration. He was involved in it back then. And it is a program that a lot of people think very highly of. Portland Community College, my own, you know, my own employer, has had a relationship with Western Governors for a number of years now, where students get their associate's degree at PCC and then take courses through through Western Governors for the bachelor's or master's level. We had presentations on it that were very impressive, and we feel that this is also something that the HEC should be looking into, forming a relationship, some kind of transfer agreements or things like that with Western Governors. I'll turn it over to my co-chair to elaborate on what I've said. I think, you know, as I say, this was quite enthusiastically received by our committee, and actually we heard the initial presentations in together with jointly with the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce.
Representative Johnson.
Co-chairs, committee members, thank you. I'll try to just second some of the comments from my other portion of one of the odd couples in the building. I'll use a few fewer syllables. I agree with what he says. This bill is about, I think, finding efficiencies. It's about trying to help Oregonians navigate our higher ed system in a way that is more timely and more efficient and hopefully less costly. We need to ensure that, to whatever degree possible, we enable folks to get credit for competencies that they have so that they can become equipped for job placement and become contributors to our economy. That's really what I think we're about here. I think the Western Governors option is an exciting one. It fits a niche for some folks pursuing a degree. They don't offer everything. They're not an all things to all people type of organization, but they're very targeted in what they do, and they do it in an efficient manner and a very affordable manner as well. So again, as we make that, as we remain committed to trying to achieve our 40-40 aspirational goal, I agree with Representative Dembrough that we have to look outside the box for ways to try to make that happen. We just don't have the bricks and mortar available to accomplish that. We need to, I think, use every tool available to us as a state to try to make that happen. So, but I think we have to make one other point here, too, though, is that we are, again, assigning additional responsibilities to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission that has not yet been appointed, but it's supposed to be on the job come July 1, I believe. So it would be nice to see that commission begin to have some flesh and bones upon it rather than simply remain in an aspirational fashion. So thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for either one of the good representatives?
I got one.
Senator Girard.
Thank you, and thanks for coming, and thanks for the bill. The question I would have is, bureaucracy is just an expansion of the hierarchical structure. I mean, we just keep adding layer after layer after layer. I like the concepts, but it seems to me like this is kind of achieving that in a sense. So I want you to talk me off the ledge, because I usually vote for what you guys like, so I'm trying to figure out why I should like the bill. And it's not just an increase in bureaucracy of another committee and another, you know, and that sort of thing.
Specifically in regards to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission?
Well,
would that be
yeah,
your question,
that,
Senator?
True. Now, and the, well, yeah, start okay. with that one.
But Johnson.
Well, it's not a new committee. It came into, you know, existence through Senate Bill 242 in the last session, in a, again, in a conceptual fashion. It hasn't been appointed yet. There will be a, there's a bill actually on your agenda coming up here, Senate Bill 4060, pardon me, no. House Bill 4061.
No, not Senate Bill.
Which will actually talk about higher ed governance, and your question might be more easily addressed in that bill, because there's a portion of that bill that's going to call for some governance consolidation, at least talk about that in a conceptual fashion. So,
To follow up, in the title here it says Drex Commission to appoint work group.
Sort
of thing. So what I'm picturing is things getting bigger when, you know, philosophically I like them more compressed. The closer the decision maker is to the decision, the better the decision. So I'm just kind of struggling with the concept here more than I am the specifics.
Okay, Ms. Chair, maybe I could jump in. The intent here is that the HEC will be convening a work group of professionals, right, from the different colleges, as they do now through the State Board of Higher Education. The Community College Association will, or CCWD will bring representatives from the different colleges together to work on a variety of topics. In the past, or it may still be going on, but it will end, a lot of these initiatives were done through what's called the Joint Boards of Education. And now the HEC will take that on. What's unique about the new HEC, and you'll hear more about this when we talk about Senate Bill 1538, is that it doesn't just bring together, you know, the community colleges in one room and the universities in another room, or maybe sometimes those two groups together, but it also will include the independent universities like Willamette across the street, as well as, you know, other independent or even for-profit entities to look at these issues. It'll also bring together representatives of our workforce development entities. We see this particular bill and the issue of prior learning and alternative means to getting degrees as being very much in line with the whole workforce development entity. So that's why this really does seem to fit.
Okay, just one last follow-up. You mentioned that this is replacing, I think you said, the joint board.
Yeah.
Are we going to do away with the joint board?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and you'll see that.
Now, see, that helps.
One step at a time.
Are there other questions? Thank you very much.
Okay.
Is there anybody else that wanted to testify on House Bill 4059? Anybody in the audience? Anybody else? Okay. If not, we'll close the public hearing and go to work session on 4059. Okay, I need a motion on 4059.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I was taking a nap. I move that we move House Bill 4059 to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection?
Oh, I think I need to say an A.
Go ahead.
4059A.
Okay. The discussion? Any objection to the motion? Somebody like to carry this to full Ways and Means?
I would love to.
Representative Comp will carry it to full Ways and Means. Okay, at this time then I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 4002. And we do have approval for the dash three amendments.
Come on in.
So has it been checked yet?
Yes, it has.
I have it right in front of me. Okay.
We can go to 4061.
Okay.
And I'll come back and find out on the 4002.
Mr. Rocco wants a final weigh in, so we will close the public hearing work session on 4002 and open public hearing and work session on 4061.
We have to wait, yes. Because the presiding officers have
Hi.
Hello.
Want to tell us about 4061?
Sure. Co-chairs, member of the committee, House Bill 4061 comes to you from the House Committee on Higher Education. It establishes a 10-member special committee on university governance. The special committee is charged with reviewing, discussing, and analyzing issues of governance within the higher education system. I believe there is no revenue impact, and you have a copy of the fiscal impact statement. The statement pretty much says that the fiscal is indeterminate, depending on two issues. One is that the committee is directed to consult with national experts to examine best practices and models of university governance. And at this time, it's indeterminate, depending on the available contributions and funds. And currently, there are no forced donations that's been identified for this work. And I believe Representative Dumbrow asked us to make copies of summation of the bill to be passed out.
And Representative Dimbro and Representative Johnson, do you want to weigh in on this one?
Sure.
And I think you also have the Dash 88 amendment with you, and it doesn't change the fiscal. It just adds that in consultation with all seven presidents of Oregon's public universities, identify potential impacts upon the other public universities and develop a detailed plan to address those impacts as part of the work of the committee.
I think you're going to need to pass out the A8. I don't...
Whose amendment is that?
And what's the genesis of the A8 amendment?
I can speak.
Okay, yes. We'll let Representative Dembro, Representative Johnson tell us about it.
It's like it costs money.
The Ways and Means Committee, because this deal is
she gave it away.
Representative Dembro, Representative Johnson. Representative Johnson, you're going first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Mark Johnson, representing House District 52. I would say that House Bill 4061 was probably the most significant piece of work that came out of our committee during this February session. It is focused on primarily two paths, I believe. One is to the creation of a special committee to try to work together in a very workmanlike fashion, let's say, over the interim to put together recommendations that will come back to the legislature in the 13th session. It will outline a process for higher ed institutions, i.e. the universities, for a path to follow should they want to pursue the pathway towards institutional governing boards. There are some very clearly laid out criteria, I believe, regarding the work that they are to do and the recommendations that they are to bring back to this body that we will then have a chance to consider in the next legislative session. Obviously, that portion of the bill, I think, is probably much of it was attributable to some of the things that happened over the course of the last year. You all are familiar with the University of Oregon and some of the situations that ensued there. So this is a bill to try to, I think, meet the needs, meet the desires, let's just say, within some sectors of our institutions or higher ed system for increased independence, but in exchange for that, also some increased accountability as well. So this is a very big piece of work that's being laid out in the laps of this task force. And the other section in there that I would say is also, I think, in some ways equally as important is to come back with some recommendations pertaining to some higher ed consolidation. Senator Girard was mentioning earlier about it seems like there's just a lot of things going on up here that sometimes it's difficult to determine what's needed and what's not and what's effective and what's not. And I think that this committee, too, will come back with some specific recommendations about things we can do to ensure that the governance that exists within our higher ed system is effective and needed, and getting the job done again with providing the support that's needed for our institutions, but also not so much support that it prevents them from being able to accomplish their educational objectives. This committee will have a heavy legislative influence, or, you know, staffing and manning. There will be four representatives and four senators, along with a couple of members from the Oregon Education Investment Board, who will be in charge of, obviously, the long-term governance of all, you know, as we talk about the P20 governance. This is going to put people involved, helping to make the proposals for what the future is going to look like. The people that are going to be on the job doing this sort of governance work and this facilitation as we move forward from here. So it's a significant bill. It's a very important bill. So I would certainly encourage your support of this and keeping this bill moving along the process. So
that's your comment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Monroe. And Representative Johnson, appreciate that. Overview on the handout that we received, because we have people that are not familiar watching this.
Mm-hmm.
You did a great job in saying the Oregon OEIB, now I can't even say Oregon Education Investment Board, but you also have marked SBHE, and we've been using the word HEC here. Many people don't know what those acronyms mean. Could you state them completely?
I'm sorry, Representative. Which is she's reading off your sheet. Okay.
Yeah.
So we have the Oregon Education Investment Board, the OEIB.
Yes.
SBHE.
State Board
of Higher Education.
Okay.
That would be the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, and others to be determined later.
Well, and HEC is what?
Higher Education Coordinating Commission.
I can't write that fast.
Yeah, that was a product of Senate Bill 242.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, can I, again, this is Representative Michael Dembro, House District 45. I think it's useful to think of this bill as Higher Education Restructuring Part 2. As we were going through the process that led to Senate Bill 242 through the legislative work group on higher education, the two of our colleagues up there, Reps Comp and Springer, were both part of that process. They'll remember that, while we were looking at the issue of the status of OUS, state agency or independent university system, we were also approached with requests to look at the question of local boards, local university governance. And what we decided to do as a part of that process was that we would deal with the OUS system piece first, and then we would come back and address the local board issue. And so it's something that the Committee on Higher Education has been talking about since then. And this bill really had its genesis. We were already talking about it before the incidents happened at the University of Oregon. Those incidents just led a great deal of urgency, I think, to it. And, there were proposals out there to completely withdraw the University of Oregon from the state system or to completely dissolve the State Board of Higher Education and the Chancellor's Office. We felt that those would be really too precipitous, and we need to really look at this carefully. And we need to have this be a process that is transparent and fact-based and also principled. And I would draw your attention to the fourth bullet on the handout, where it says the process will be transparent, consultative, and fact-driven, and the committee will be bound by the following principles. And they're all very important. First, recognize the potential benefit of the individual university boards, Ensure that the creation of a local board is the result of a careful analysis of the costs and benefits of such action. Third, if a local board is created, ensure that students, faculty, and other university staff will be represented on the board. Fourth, mitigate potential adverse impacts upon other public universities. And finally, ensure that the public mission of Oregon's public universities, including access and affordability for residents of this state, is maintained and enhanced. Those are the principles that this needs to be guided by. Do we believe that local boards are a good thing for universities? Potentially, yes. As long as all of these, the other principles are followed. As you would probably suspect, the bill that's before you was the result of a lot of hard work and careful negotiation, and I think good faith negotiation at the end of the day. And I think we have struck a balance here between satisfying the desire of certain universities to have local boards, while also recognizing the importance of the system as a whole and making sure that the actions over here don't harm the universities over there. So, and you actually have an amendment before you, a Dash 8 amendment, which further articulates that point, something that we thought was implicit in the bill, but there was a desire to call it out even more clearly. And you can see that pretty clearly in the Dash 8s.
Yeah, it looks to me like the Dash 8 doesn't really change any intent. It's just as a
clarifies.
It clarifies
exactly.
Representative Girard.
Thank you. Either one of our good representatives can respond to this. What happened to amendments 1 through 7?
Yeah. We're trying to forget them, Mr. Good Representative. Yeah.
This is the only amendment to the bill, is the Dash 8.
Well, we considered a number of amendments in the committee.
Right.
And the we left the committee, I think, with the Dash 4 amendments.
Yeah, I think 4 was the last the committee adopted.
Right. And then Dash 7 was the sort of pre-version of what's Dash 8 now. There were some problems with it.
Following, go ahead.
So there's no change in the original bill not outlined in Amendments 4 and 8. They are the only changes you made.
The Dash 4 created what became the engrossed A version.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Additional questions for the witnesses? Representative Senator Girard.
Of course I have a question. I need to be talked off the cliff again here. The problem I have, Section 1, we talk about how you're going to put the board together. The President of the Senate shall create 4 positions, the Speaker of the House shall create 4 members, and the Governor shall create 2 members. Boards are determined by who you put on them, and I have a little bit of angst about that. That's not broad spectrum right out of the gate. Then I read through the bill and I try to figure out how the votes are going to be taken. Is it going to be that you have to have concurrence, or is it going to be majority rule? And that's silent in the bill, unless I'm missing it somewhere, except on line 38 and 39 says the committee may adopt rules necessary for operation of the committee. So what I'm really concerned about is we're going to create a committee to create what somebody wants and not necessarily what's best for the public. So talk me off the cliff.
Well, I'll take a stab at it.
Representative Senator Denver.
Thank you. So what comes out of this committee will be legislation that will come before the 2013 session. And it's in the interest of the committee to come up with legislation that can pass in the 2013 legislature. And so, our thinking behind the numbers involved here were, we would have 4 from each chamber, and the assumption, although it's not explicitly stated in there, is that there would be 2 from each party from each chamber. Okay, so in totality, we'll have 4 Democrats, 4 Republicans. We felt that to move the bill successfully, we also needed to have the involvement of the executive branch. In this case, members of the OEIB that have been, that have been appointed to deal with the educational continuum. And we actually saw that as a positive for the bill. Now, the question of how you, how we're going to move forward in terms of decision making, I think the assumption is the bottom line would be majority rule. But again, my own personal expectation would be, if I want to create legislation that has a chance of passing in 2013, I'm going to want, as we did with the previous work group, to be submitting legislation that has that is essentially consensus legislation. This is not something we've talked about, so I don't know where the representative is on this.
Well, I would just say, I think, second Representative
Johnson.
Thank you. Representative Dembrough states a strong consensus, and again, the intent is to create legislation that's going to be able to be considered and be effective and to get passed. And I think if there would be a super strong minority report to come out of this committee, I think it would probably not be conducive to the fate of that legislation. So I do think the committee's intent will be to come up with something that is palatable to everyone and accomplishes really the objectives. And but I do understand your concern, Senator, and in terms of who is the makeup of this committee, ultimately, yes, it is up to the Senate President and the co-speakers, but I do believe that they have enough interest in the outcome that they will appoint individuals who I think are up to the task and up on the issues and understand where we have come from, where we are, and where we hope to go. So I would hope that they would have all of those criteria in mind as they make those appointments.
Okay. Representative Shields, or Senator Shields.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My heart will always be in the House. Let's say this whole process goes forward. Would this legislation, would it even be possible to say, you know, we just don't think local control is a very good idea? I mean, is there anything in this legislation that would even allow this group to come to that conclusion?
To say that the local, that, for example, the University of Oregon could not have a local board.
Yeah,
that it would be have such harm on the rest of the system that it would be, you know, I think, Senator Shields, that the question really is not so much whether a university has a board, but it's more what are the powers of that board? Who sits on that board? Who appoints the members of the board? Those are the tricky things that need to be worked out. You know, I think that the State Board of Higher Education has already been looking at this issue of allowing local boards to have, universities to have local boards. But the question becomes, so what does that mean to have a local board? What are the powers? And, you know, that's what the focus of the committee is going to have to be. What kind of authorities do we give to these boards?
So, go ahead.
So have we taken any type of legislative vote before on whether or not we should have local boards or not have local boards? I mean, this is kind of the legislation, right? By voting yes, you're saying we want local boards.
I saw them both nodding yes.
I would, Senator, I would just say it's not a vote for local boards, but it's a vote for a process to put together the criteria that institutions who would want to choose that avenue would have to satisfy in order to be able to have a local board. I think that's a more accurate way to characterize it.
I think we're parsing words.
I would second that, actually. And, you know, frankly, we've heard strong desires on the part of a couple of our universities, Portland State and the University of Oregon, to have the ability to form local boards. And, you know, I think that it makes sense to explore those desires, and that's what this committee will do.
Thank you.
So, this legislation does not create local boards. It allows for local boards. If there are local boards, it sets criteria, governance for the way those local boards would be formed and how much and what authority they would have.
The legislation that would come out of this process would articulate that, yes,
right.
Mr. Chair. This bill in and of itself does not create anything than the committee.
Committee, yeah, 10-member committee. Additional questions? Okay.
Mr. Chair, can I just address the issue of the fiscal on it? You know, in terms of there was reference to outside experts being brought in, I think our intent is that, and we put language in the bill to allow outside groups to pay for that, as it were. You know, we're members of a number of national consortia like Education Commission for the States, NCSL, WICHE, you know, all of which have professionals available that have expressed willingness to help us with this process. And then, you know, we have, like last September during our committee days, we had a gentleman from the University of Virginia came out, and he was paid for by the University of Oregon Foundation. I expect that we won't have a problem getting help in bringing experts together that we can consult with.
I would just add, just to sum up, Mr. Chair, I think Representative Denbro would agree with me that I think we tried to walk a very fine line with this legislation between the desires of those who would rather go farther, faster, and those who think that this goes too far, too fast. I think we've struck a reasonable middle ground that I think will be productive and will, again, come back with some quality legislation, legislative recommendations that this this legislature will have a chance to seriously take a lot of time to examine in 2013.
Thank you. Additional questions for these gentlemen? Thank you very much. We have another witness that wanted to testify, Emma Calloway. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm losing my voice a little bit, so I apologize if it sounds hoarse. Good morning, co-chairs Monroe, Comp, and Springer. My name is Emma Calloway. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Student Association today to speak in opposition to 4061 unless amended. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that. I'd like to give my testimony and then pose a few questions to the body that I hope you discuss today before taking any action. So first, students are asking, how can this bill task a research committee with a pre-drafted conclusion for a report? It states that the special committee shall recommend legislation for the creation of local governing boards at public universities listed in ORS 352. The plan for implementing local boards shall. And then it goes on to list all the ways that it will do that. That sounds like a statement I would get an F for in a research methodology class. This is a conclusion to a research paper before one has begun to even do the research, and it's concerning to us. Students are being told that there's a concern about the current system, there's concerns with trust, there's a lot of politics involved, and that the current system is confusing. And we agree. We think we can be doing things better, and what we're asking, though, is that the task force go back to its original draft, which sorted out and talked a lot about what Representative Johnson was talking about in terms of what does the OEIB, what does the HEC, what does OUS, what does CCWD, and then what possibly can local boards do or what role can they play. We are disappointed that the politics have shaped a bill when its original purpose was something that we agreed with and that we desperately need. At this time, the task force is looking more towards local boards and spending an awful lot of time stipulating how a local board will be created, as opposed to looking at higher education governance in general and making solid recommendations for 2013. Finally, not only does this bill stipulate a list of questions A through J to address in regards to local boards, but the bill goes on to state that that local boards should be done and this timeline should be rapid. And Representative Denbro, you also, and Representative Johnson talked about walking that fine line. We think that that part doesn't walk a fine line. We think that it doesn't allow us the time to carefully look at local boards and their needs. So this time I'd like to pose just a few questions to the body that students are asking. Even though tuition is too high, Oregon has been able to keep tuition much lower than Washington and California, for example, with varying governance structures, with some tuition increases as high as 15% or 30% in a single year. So I'll start by asking, what mechanisms are in place with an institutional board to ensure that tuition prices are accountable and accessible to all Oregonians? One of our next questions is, why is a local board better than an institutional board, especially for statewide flagship institutions such as the University of Oregon? We think that that question hasn't really been addressed. And what's the difference between those two mechanisms? Because our research shows that they're very different. How will you ensure that an institutional board doesn't overshadow the voice of regional campuses in regards to bonding authority or general fund allocation? And what evidence do you have to suggest that a local board is better than an intact statewide system? When, from the student perspective, the Chancellor's Office or the Oregon University system is often the link between campus administrations and students. And we are concerned that a new system won't be able to be the same type of arbitrator we've seen before. And not to mention, the Oregon University system has recently testified that they save $500,000 to $700,000 per year per campus because of the coordinated system that exists. When I posed these questions to the Higher Education Committee, I was told that the task force will figure out these questions, and again that I ask, how can a task force start to work with or address some of these questions when a foregone conclusion has already been drawn? That's what I have to say today. We hope that you will very much consider these questions before taking any action, and I'd be happy to take any further questions on where the Oregon Student Association is at on this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Shields.
So you suggested that what gets you to yes would be an amendment. Have you drafted one? Do you have one in mind at this point?
Yes. Co-Chair Monroe and Senator Shields, the amendments that were drafted by Representative Hunt that changed the language from shall to may develop institutional boards, or local boards, I'm sorry, that language would get us to yes on this bill. And we think that that type of legislation opens up the committee to be able to address many facets of local board governance.
Additional questions?
In response to that, Emma's absolutely correct that there was a dash five amendment, but it didn't come out of the policy committee. It was, in the end, as I think Rep. Johnson said, we were walking this fine line, and there was a feeling that that would have taken us too far over to the other side. And I would just add that every question that Emma is posing here is a very legitimate question and one that will be taken up as we're trying to craft what are the authorities of these local boards if they are going to have one. States, many, many states have systems where they have local boards. Others do not. I mean, you look around the country, you'll see all different models. What we need to do is come up with a model that is right for Oregon. Thank you.
Okay. Any additional questions? Emma, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Paul.
Thank you. Emma, what line, I'm not even on the right page here, but what line are you talking about that to change it from shall to may?
Co-Chair Monroe and Representatives and Co-Chair Comp, it's my understanding that it's Section 4 of the bill. It starts with, this committee shall recommend legislation. The dash fives that were suggested by Representative Hunt changed shall to may. And the last line where it says the plan for implementing local boards, that shall seem to be fine staying. And then the amendments that were also drafted by Representative Hunt also took out the word rapid in the timeline. That is a secondary priority to ours. The shall language is the most important.
Okay. She said Section 4, but she meant Sub 4 of Section 1, I believe.
Okay.
Additional questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Shields.
I must say I find Emma's testimony quite compelling, and I know that we're not supposed to be doing policy work in Ways and Means. However, a lot of my policy bills end up getting sent to Ways and Means to do policy work. So I just wanted to let you know that I'm not feeling comfortable. I think what Emma is proposing is bringing it back to neutral. And so I think I really do appreciate the work that has gone into this. I think I do want to, before we go into a work session, express my concern and that I would be inclined to vote no on it if that means that we need to bring somebody else in to get this through to the full. I'm open to that. But I think I do apologize to those who've come and talked to me about this before. This line of argument if it was explained to me before, it didn't quite register to the degree, and I apologize if I may have indicated to people that I would be okay with this, but I think in good conscience I can't vote for it coming out of committee.
I have a comment.
Senator Gerard.
I have similar concerns, but for different reasons. And that's the way Section 1 establishes the board. Being somewhat of a minority party in this building and having the conclusions on a majority rule vote bothers me. There's 10 positions. You know, right now there would probably be two R's for sure. I just think that you want a really good cross-section of people to make these decisions. And I don't see that that's guaranteed in this bill. I also agree with the young lady that, you know, you might not want to make that recommendation. And so the shall and may, that doesn't bother me. However, the question of local boards, I think, is probably a good idea. I just, you know, this is one of those, you know, we try to get something done in 28 days, and I just don't think it's quite there yet. So I'm kind of inclined to vote no.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Kahn.
I am very much of the same mind as Senator Shields, and I don't know if we need to take a brief recess to talk to the presiding officers or whoever we need to talk to, but I really like the idea of leaving the opportunity for the discussion about may rather than shall. I think that's part of democracy. I think that's part of why we're here. And that we're not totally mandating a shall there. So I don't know what we need to do, because this is tinkering with policy, which my colleague, Senator Shields, said very well, in which we're not supposed to do in Ways and Means. So I think we need a little bit of advice.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I was actually sitting on the higher ed committee the day that that amendment came forward, and I definitely looked closely to that at that. The concern I had with the amendment, and I think the two senators bring up a valid point, and I guess if I could speak to it, what I would say is that amendment, the very desire to have the amendment is that we set a predetermined outcome. I don't necessarily think we have set a predetermined outcome, because it lays out, this is the task. We do that all the time in task forces. This is what we think we need. We need some very specific steps and criteria to get to this point. And then at that point, we look at that and say, wow, what is needed for local boards at this area, in this area, is just too big of a hurdle to get over. Doesn't make sense. It costs too much. It whatever. The may, I think, just broadens the scope of the special committee to a point where I don't know if we will come back with that task, and my fear would be we would come back with that report. I forget the first deadline there. It's a few months out. Come back with that first report and maybe not have accomplished anything to say, if there's local boards, this is what they need to look like. And I was a no on that amendment in committee.
Yeah, let me weigh in a little bit. I see the current language as actually permissive, in that it states that this committee shall recommend legislation, but it doesn't say that that legislation shall be approved by the next session of the legislature. That's up to the next session of the legislature, and it's up to this committee being properly picked with good, balanced, equal number of R's and D's and so on, and doing and people that can work together and can come up with an agreement. If you change the shall to may, then the committee doesn't have to do anything. Because if it says they may create legislation, that also means they may not. And I think what, you know, may means may or may not. I remember from my logic classes. And so
I see the current language as giving this committee a task and saying, go forth and do it, and then bring it back, and the next session of the legislature will decide whether we like your product or not. If we're going to have the committee, they need to have a task to do, and it needs to be a requirement on that committee that they do their task to the best of their ability. So I would resist changes, not only for that reason, but because, you know, we are not a policy committee. A very, very good policy committee worked and worked and worked on this and came out with this product. I think we need to honor that. Representative Kump.
Mr. Chair, with that statement on the record as our intent, that as you said it, because I'm not going to try to repeat it, I would agree with your comment.
Thank you. Now, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
This time I'd like to close the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 4061.
Mr. Chair?
We need a motion on the Dash 8 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we amend House Bill 4061 with the Dash 8 amendment dated 2/2012.
Okay,
I don't know if I said House Bill 4061A. I mean 4061A.
4061A with the 8 Dash 8 amendment. Is there discussion on the motion?
I think, yes,
Senator Jawad.
Not to embarrass the chair, but I think there might be a constitutional problem with this motion.
Well, if there's a constitutional problem, the chair can call in the big co-chairs to vote. I prefer not to have to do that.
Is the motion that we have before us simply to move the amendment?
Yeah.
The motion
yes.
is to move the amendment. Is there objection to the motion to move the amendment? It's amended. Okay, now, do I have to call in the co-chair?
Yes.
All right.
Recess.
We're in a recess, and we need the co-chair. By the Dash 8 amendments.
Yes.
Are we ready to go on 402?
We are.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a question.
Sure.
Were the Dash 8s?
Yes.
Yes,
we adopted moved into
the Dash
8s. That's
yes.
True.
They are in it.
Yep. Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, at this time we're going to open a public hearing work session on House Bill 4002.
Chairman Rowe, members of the committee, House Bill 4002 establishes a subaccount dedicated to funding investments in professional forestry education within the Oregon University System Fund. The measure also establishes a 5-member Forestry Education Council appointed by the President of Oregon State University.
That's my amendment.
There should be a Dash A3 amendment that you have all received. Fiscal impact on this bill identifies some sources of funds, but the amount of money in the fund is not known at this time. Once funding is identified, Oregon University System assumes a minimal fiscal for the expenses of the council.
And my understanding is that the Dash A3 amendments are the work of a combination of folks that are then in support of the bill with that amendment, and I'd like to at this time call on Ray Wilkinson and Steve Tesh. Come on forward. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ray Wilkinson, Oregon Forest Industries Council, here to speak in support of House Bill 4002. I very much appreciate your holding this hearing, and the hard work that's gone into it by several members of your committee to get us to where we are, which I think is a good place. The bill, as staff indicated, would create a forestry education council. The bill's language itself is modeled very closely after the ETIC law, which I'm sure this committee is familiar with, and was adopted by the legislature in 1997 at the urging of the high-tech industry to ensure that their workforce needs in the future were met by the Oregon system of higher education, mainly engineering in their case. And we have the same concern about forestry education going forward, and in our instance, there's only one forestry school, and that's at Oregon State University, so this bill is specific to Oregon State University. By all accounts, or most people's accounts anyway, we have here in Oregon at Corvallis the number one forestry school in the United States, and that's something that we should be proud of, both as we are as a forest industry and the whole state should be proud of. It's a crown jewel of our system of higher education. But its future is not necessarily certain. It has funding, unique funding challenges. And there's also been a trend around the country that we've noticed in recent years that's troubling to us, where other universities that formerly had very good professional forestry schools have gotten away from that kind of professional training regime that is important for the future of the forest industry. And that the professional degree program at Oregon State is essential to our future. We need foresters just like the high-tech industry needs engineers. So this bill is designed to create a mechanism that will allow us to strengthen the partnership that we have with Oregon State University, a public-private partnership, to make sure that the core curriculum at Corvallis in the forestry school is maintained. As the staff indicated, there's no money going into this account that's created right now. There may be in the future. We put resources as well as words behind our support for the College of Forestry. Every year you vote on a harvest tax bill that achieves a number of purposes. A principal one is support for the OSU College of Forestry Research Program to a tune of about $3 million a year. So that's money that we agree to pay to support the college. In conversations we've had with the college in recent months, there has been suggested that maybe we could increase that financial commitment, and I think we'd be willing to do that, particularly if it addresses the curriculum and the workforce needs that we have in the future. Establishing this council, similar to the ETEC council, would make that more likely and more likely to happen. So that's the basis of the bill. We do support the A3 amendments. The written testimony I passed out indicated that we know there was concerns about obligating general fund. We certainly don't anticipate that. We're not asking you to do that. And also the amendments also talk about not necessarily obligating harvest tax dollars in the future. We think that's a perfectly appropriate amendment and would support that also.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Tesh?
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee. My name is Steve Tesh. I'm the Executive Associate Dean for the Oregon State College of Forestry. I very much appreciate the compliments paid to the college by my colleague, Mr. Wilkerson. I'm here today to testify for Dr. Hal Salwasser. He had a longstanding commitment to a PhD defense this afternoon, and he chose to support the student, so I hope you don't feel offended at that. I'm also here with my colleague, Dr. Thomas Manis, who is the department head for the Forest Engineering Resources and Management Department. That's the academic department within the college that is responsible for delivering the professional forestry education programs that are the subject of this bill. I'm here to provide strong support to House Bill 4002 with the A3 amendments as offered. We very much appreciate the work of our colleagues in the forest sector to champion the continuation of the strong forestry education programs that we have in the college, and we appreciate the work of the committee to get us to this point. We hope this will be successful going forward. Thanks very much. Be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question, but I just want to say something very briefly to the A3 amendment here, and that is I think this was originally Representative Clem's bill, and he has walked in the room, which is probably not noted, and given the thumbs up, and we've had brief conversations. So he's certainly on board with this.
You had me until then.
I'm not sure if that was right.
Additional questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Shields.
This seems like a very good idea. I'll be pleased to support it.
Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Close public hearing, open work session on 4002. Need a motion on the dash A3 amendment.
Mr. Co-Chair, I'd make motion to amend House Bill 4002 with the dash A3 amendment dated 2/22/12.
Any discussion? Any objections? Motion on the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, I would make a motion to move House Bill 4002 as amended to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion? Any objections? Motion carried. Representative Girard, you want to carry it?
Sure.
Love day. It'll be assigned to Representative Girard, and look forward to that. Yeah, Fred, I need to chat with you and see if we can work that other issue out. Okay, at this time, I'll close the work session on 002, and we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1538 relating to education. Public hearing. John, is that yours?
Yeah. Senator Monroe, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1538 expands and clarifies the duties of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, or HEC, within the Oregon Education Investment Board. It places the HEC under direction and control of the Oregon Education Investment Board until March 15, 2016. It transfers authority over dual credits and transfer credits from the Joint Boards of Education to the HEC, and also transfers licensing authority of career schools from the State Board of Education to HEC. The transfers are operative July 1st, 2012. Included in your packet with the fiscal and the original bill is also a dash A10 amendment. So hopefully someone is here to speak to that as well.
A10? Okay. But we're not in work session, so I don't think I can adopt any amendments today. Okay, Bridget Burns wants to testify.
Hi,
co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, Bridget Burns, Chief of Staff for the Oregon University System. Today I'm here to talk to you about Senate Bill 1538, just give you a high-level flyover of what's enclosed within the bill, talk to you about some backstory about where this is coming from, and ultimately I think there are two questions on folks' mind when it comes to this piece of legislation and the overarching issues surrounding the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission. And those two questions are, what really is the HEC going to do, and what is the difference between the HEC, the OEIB, and the State Board of Higher Ed? So I'll go on to that in a little bit. But in terms of Senate Bill 1538, the first thing it does is it really just kind of firms up some of the responsibilities of the HEC. As you'll recall, back last year, Senate Bill 242 and Senate Bill 909 passed out at about the same time. And since then, there's been a lot of conversation, a lot of really innovative thoughts have come forward in terms of how that's going to go forward in terms of the achievement compacts and the OEIB. And in response to that, it made more sense that the bulk of the responsibilities pertaining to achievement compacts should not be at the HEC. They should actually be at the OEIB. So that's one piece that's clarified. Another issue that's enclosed within Senate Bill 1538 is that there was a minor technical amendment requested by the Treasurer's Office of the State Board of Higher Ed last year when we passed out Senate Bill 242. And that technical amendment just merely makes it easier for them when they pass legislation. They can refer to state agencies, and in that instance, it will still refer to the State Board of Higher Ed and the Oregon University System. But otherwise, we are no longer a state agency. Additionally, it transfers the career schools to the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission, which will be joined by the Office of Degree Authorization as well as the Oregon Student Assistance or Access Commission in terms of location of responsibilities. And finally, it moves the post-secondary piece pertaining to the data system. We've all been talking about how we're going to revolutionize data. It moves that to the OEIB because it also shouldn't be at the HEC. Now, the Dash 10 amendments are pretty critical, and I hope that you will have a work session soon about these. The first thing the Dash 10 does is it makes their one-year lag from when the career schools will go over to the HEC. Now, as we all know, the HEC is supposed to start up July 1, but you know, nothing is going to be firmly in place at that time. So it's most appropriate in order to have continuity of services that we have the career schools transfer over 1 year from now in 2013. This is something that's requested by the Oregon Department of Education, and it's supported by all parties that I've heard from. Additionally, there's just a minor error that took place in the Dash 8, 6s that just took out some budget authority that OUS needs, and it was just merely an over-delete that was unintentional. So this just places that back in. So the Dash 10s are fairly benign, but also fairly critical. But beyond that, I will just so that's what Senate Bill 1538 is composed of. In terms of where we are with what this legislation is it's basically firming up and clarifying post 242. Now, as you all recall from seeing 242 last year, there were a multitude of dates that were featured within that bill, the first of which was July 1 of last year. On that date, no longer was expenditure limitation imposed on OUS. So at that point, when families gave us and students gave us their tuition money, we could then spend that money on students right away instead of having to wait a lag time to be able to ask for permission from the legislature and expend it. So that's the first piece. It's already been implemented. Another date that was important in 242 was January 1 of this year. On that date, OUS became no longer a state agency, and it's now a public university system. We are now no longer covered by the Department of Justice, and we had to take on some legal counsel to be able to work on the specific issues that are dealt with by our campuses. And also, we've procured a risk manager, and we've got a risk management consultant, and we're going to be hiring a risk manager. And then on July 1, all risk management will take place with OUS. Now, this is where we saw with Senate Bill 242 a lot of the cost savings, because the risks that are enclosed within higher ed are a little bit different than the rest of the state. And on January 1, tuition interest earnings are also now retained. And all of the money that we're retaining is now going to need-based aid. So that's where we're at right now. But the big question out there and the next thing is July 1, the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission, which came out of 242, would be taking place. So now I'll talk to you briefly about what I think are the two functional questions that still sit around when we're talking about this issue, and my perspective on it from where I sit. What is the HEC? In its its real substance, the HEC would be essentially a convener. It would not be prescriptive. It would be about cultivating a sense of collaboration and partnership. Right now, the Joint Boards Working Group does that work, kind of. What we heard from consultants when the original committee of legislators got together, that some of you were on, was from the consultants, they said, you know, Oregon's great at collaboration, despite your structure. So this is about putting some structure around those things that incentivize collaboration, which incentivizing collaboration is actually a challenge because governance is about, you know, day-to-day operation, keeping the lights on, keeping the doors open, making sure that students' degrees have value. Collaboration is something that we want to do, but generally speaking, we're so focused on our job that we're trying to do that it's, you know, sometimes doesn't always happen. And so the HEC would be about providing best practices, information sharing, thinking about things like articulation agreements and dual credit, the things that kind of transcend the different sectors. And the way I like to look at it is that the HEC is going to kind of hold the 80%. When we talk about the 40-40-20, there's, you know, 40% within that the community colleges are focused on and 40% that OUS is looking at. But the truth is, OUS doesn't make up that entire 40%. OHSU and the independent colleges and universities also make up a large part. So this would be the Legislative Assembly's arm that would look at, okay, who's going to hold the bag on this entire 80%? How are we going to get students to these points of degrees, certificates, et cetera, regardless of whether or not we're talking about independent colleges or public community colleges or public universities or OHSU. So it really would be a resource for the Legislative Assembly if you had any questions pertaining to things that kind of weren't sector-specific but really were student-specific about their experience. Things like transfer, things like retention rates that you might see when a student moves to a different institution. There are currently a lot of things that go on with joint boards. The JBAC, UEE, Joint Boards Articulation Committee. The reason that Oregon's so great at articulation agreements came out of the joint boards. We have an articulation agreement between every community college and every OUS institution, and the real genesis of that happened in the joint boards. So what the HEC would do is all that same work, but now there would actually be a staff. Because right now, the joint boards is, you know, by the generosity of CCWD and OUS, that we provide some staffing, and it's comprised mainly of current members of the State Board of Ed and the State Board of Higher Ed, but this would actually put some actual like infrastructure around it so that we could make sure that work is ongoing and also possibly take on additional ventures. When I think about in my role what I think the HEC could be doing for me, if we had any one of our institutions that had particular challenges with one career path, or maybe they wanted to expand one degree area, I would be able to call up the HEC and say, you know, X institution's really interested in this issue. Who else is talking about this? And hopefully the person at the HEC would be knowledgeable and have great relationships with every community college and every institution, every independent college and OHSU, and they would say, you should talk to Umpqua Community College and Clatsop, and you should also talk to George Fox, and these are the people you should hear from. And also, maybe you should listen to what's going on in Kentucky, because they're also doing some really cool stuff that I want to share with you, and here's what they learned. So it would be a resource. It would never tell me what to do. It would be something that would make it easier for me to be able to be collaborative as I go about my day-to-day job. And this is something that would be a resource for not just community colleges and OUS, again, for the independents and OHSU. So it's not intended to be large. I don't think that the HEC is ever going to be the size of the chancellor's office, which, you know, because we do things like payroll for all the campuses and risk and all these things. It really would just be a resource to try and provide some insight in how we can better collaborate and to be able to put some structure around the work we're doing. In terms of some of, you know, what is this different? How is this different from what's going on in the OEIB and the State Board of Higher Ed? Or local independent boards, governance, coordination, and budget are really the differences. Governance is something that is day-to-day operation. As I said, it's about fiduciary responsibility, it's managing risk, it's public safety, it's worrying about employee-employer relationship, negotiating contracts. It's a multitude of things, but they are focused entirely on having your institution be its best and excel and make sure your students are getting what they need. And sometimes you have time to look up and look at what's going on over there, but generally your focus should be right in front of you. That's what governance is. Coordination is kind of in between. It's the stuff that we don't always see. It's on our peripheral, but it's absolutely critical, especially as we're building a pipeline where students can go between all of these different types of institutions throughout the state. And in terms of what the OEIB does, you know, in my perspective, I see the OEIB as kind of a ways and means process for education. They're looking at all the education sectors, they're identifying proficiency points, they're identifying prices of what kind of outcomes we want to associate those prices with. And it's also pushing about some major transformation that kind of is, again, about the P20, and it's about seamlessness, but it's also about innovation in a completely different way. But that's not about governance. So I realize that there's a lot of talk that there are all these boards floating around, but I do think that Senator Girard, you pointed out earlier in your earlier question that the joint boards already exist. The HEC is not actually is not going to be adding a plus one. It's merely taking a minus one, takes out the joint boards, and replaces it. So this is not an extra board. It's more that we're finally going to have a functioning long-term commitment to coordination in this state. And this is something that exists in other states. States around the country have coordinating commissions, and they're very, very useful. I hope that that's been helpful. I'm happy to answer any other questions you might have pertaining to Senate Bill 1538. But otherwise, that's all I have to say.
Question for Ms. Burns. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else that wanted to testify on this bill? If not, we'll close the public hearing on 1538. Ladies, co-chairs, I would like this one to be put on our list to hear with the Dash 10 amendments. If you feel like that, would you put your name there and by mine? I'd appreciate that. And we'll you're going to take care of this, or?
Yeah,
if in fact we meet again, otherwise we can go to capital construction. Anyway, this meeting is adjourned.
Yeah.
And Fred.